Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. On the program with this week is Jimmy Vielkind, Albany Bureau Chief for Politico. Welcome, Jimmy.
Thanks for having me.
So now it's Politico. It had a different name before, right?
That's right. It's been under the same ownership for the last 2 years since Politico came in and bought the little website Capital in New York. And that's about when I came on to start up the operation here at the state capitol in Albany. But as Politico has announced plans and started to expand into other states around the country, we decided that it would be better to have a consistent brand. And so we're now Politico New York. We've already launched Politico New Jersey and Politico Florida. Politico Massachusetts is coming, and we've hired certain people to seed our operations in both Illinois and California. So very excited to be growing.
And so what is it? You put out, which I read religiously, news for all of us every morning, but you also do special services, right?
Well, that's right. Well, so right now we have the largest bureau at the state capitol. We have the most journalists covering New York state government of any outlet right now. And a lot of what we do is basically the things that newspapers and television stations, radio stations have been doing for centuries, covering state government, covering the legislature, covering Governor Cuomo, and just really trying to track the flow of money, the flow of ideas, and the flow of legislation through our state government. And, you know, the business model that we use, instead of sort of the traditional business model that you think of for a newspaper, which is a large amount of subscriptions at low amount, right? Because it doesn't cost very much to buy a newspaper or to subscribe to a newspaper. What we do is we target people, institutions mostly, who have a vested interest in having very, very insightful, up to the minute, and very quick coverage of what's going on in state government. And that is our subscriber base. And we do charge a little bit more than the regular, you know, however many dollars it would cost you to subscribe to a daily newspaper. It's probably somewhere around twice as much per year when you do the math.
So are we talking about fat cat lobbyists and people like that?
Well, we know we have some of the lobbying firms. We have most big law firms in town, labor unions, labor organizations, lots of nonprofit groups. Really the people who deal most with state government and who really have an interest in and a need, really, to know what's going on in state government.
Can they call you and ask you to look into something for them?
Well, no. I mean, they can call me and pitch a story just the way anyone else can pitch a story. But, you know, one of the great things about the organization is that it was founded by people whose experience, you know, and this is probably not true of a lot of the, I'm going to put some air quotes here, but your listeners can't see them, of the new media companies. But in that we're rooted and really carry the same sensibilities of the more traditional news outlets. So you probably remember, Alan, I spent about 5 years working for the Albany Times Union, the local paper here. And before that, the New York Observer. You know, our top editors were veterans of the Washington Post before they decided to try and build something new and building Politico starting in, I think, 2006. It's almost been 9 years now. And our editors at Politico New York have similar backgrounds and experiences. So, you know, we are journalists just like others. The only real difference is sort of the economic model, which we're proud to say is working and proud to see is growing, and particularly proud to be doing so at a time when other media organizations are having a little bit of a harder time.
So, with that said, and it's very interesting, and congratulations on everything you've done.
Thank you.
Let me move on to ask you the questions that perplex this old professor.
Uh-oh, fire away.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I've asked a lot of people this question, but I have no real idea on how to answer it. Charlie Brown, why is everybody always picking on me? Why is Andrew Cuomo intent on making war on Bill de Blasio?
So right out of the bat. So listeners should know just a little bit of the background here in that, you know, Bill de Blasio, the mayor of New York City, came into office in 2013, was elected. And, you know, I think it's fair to say that earlier in the summer, people did not expect that he would be the candidate who would emerge from the pack of Democrats who sought to succeed Michael Bloomberg as mayor. But he did come to the fore, and he did so with a liberal message, one that's built around trying to attack income inequality. And he won the election easily and almost immediately started to have some tension with Governor Cuomo. Now, let me give a little disclaimer up front. These men claim they are friends. Again, these are the air quotes that I'm making, listeners. They say that they've known each other for a long time. They say that they have a good working relationship. And yet, at every turn, Governor Cuomo has sought to undermine Mayor de Blasio, whether it's through small little slights like scheduling a competing event at a similar time or not inviting the mayor when he's doing certain things, to more major and substantive disagreements. Right now, de Blasio and Cuomo are locking horns over how much money to send the MTA, the Metropolitan Transportation Authority, which of course runs the subways, the buses, the Long Island Railroad, the Metro North Railroad. So there's a gigantic hole in the MTA's five-year capital plan. And Governor Cuomo is trying to sort of get de Blasio to up the city's share. Governor Cuomo is saying, hey, New York City's doing pretty well now. There was a lot of time several decades ago where New York City was really in the dumps and New York State came forward to bail out. So why aren't you stepping up and doing a little bit more? So that's by way of background. And I think we're going to see, it's certainly something that I watch for consistently, that no matter what's going on, what is the relationship between the governor and the mayor? And generally speaking, how is the governor undermining the mayor? Now, things really started to come to a head in June, if we can flash back by a few months. So in June, at the end of the state's regular legislative session, Mayor de Blasio had several items on his agenda that he was hoping to usher through Albany. One of them was a plan to renew the 421A tax subsidy. This is a subsidy that goes to big developers and real estate firms in New York City, and that de Blasio was hoping could be tweaked in such a way that would incentivize these developers to build more affordable housing. It's been a big hallmark of his administration. He wants to have, I think, 200,000 more units of affordable housing. And he needs the real estate guys, the Real Estate Board of New York is their formal title. He needs them to really step up to the plate and do it. And so he tried, in the context of legislative negotiations in Albany, to get these tweaks made to the 421A program. He also wanted control of New York City schools. Now, some people might remember it was a huge fight when Michael Bloomberg came in and said, I want to abolish the New York City Board of Education. I want to appoint a school's chancellor. I want the buck about New York City schools to stop with me, the mayor, and to stop at the front door of City Hall. Though it's probably the back door because the education department is headquartered behind City Hall, but that's not material. And so de Blasio sought to renew this control, and he sought to have a longer time frame. Mike Bloomberg got 7 years at a stretch was the state legislative authorization. And so de Blasio started for that, and then maybe he settled for three, and instead he got just 1 year. And so de Blasio's aides have said that they don't feel that Governor Cuomo really had their back in these private negotiations. Because again, and this is one of the little secrets that a lot of people don't realize, and even some New York City mayors have a tendency to learn the hard way, that even though you're the mayor of this powerful city, you have $100 billion in your budget, you have the world's media coming to your doorstep every day, you know, you control the Empire State Building, et cetera, et cetera. When it comes to law, you really are kind of at the mercy of the state capitol. And so really, de Blasio was beholden to Governor Cuomo, to the leader of the state assembly, Carl Hastie, the new speaker, and John Flanagan, the new leader of the New York State Senate. And I have to point out those new leaders because the old leaders, Sheldon Silver and Dean Skelos, were both ousted this year after they were indicted by federal prosecutors. It's one of those things that makes New York the Empire State. And so, you know, their trials are pending, but they have been removed from the leadership position. And de Blasio in particular made an enemy of the Senate Republicans in the 2014 elections, because Mayor de Blasio pushed pretty hard to get the Democrats in control of the state Senate and failed. And it's that old adage, you know, if you're going to shoot the bear, kill the bear. Don't just shoot the bear and make him angry. And so de Blasio had that working against him, but he really felt that Cuomo could have done more to help him than he did.
Wait, stop you, Jimmy. But Cuomo so clearly hates him. I mean, he just hates him. And that was the original question. Why?
Well, it was the original statement, which was Charlie Brown, right?
Yeah.
De Blasio is sick of being Charlie Brown kicking the football as Lucy, in this case, Governor Cuomo, pulls it away time and time again. So at the end of June, I'm sorry, I was going a little bit
long-winded.
But
why does he pull it away? Why is Cuomo so angry at de Blasio? Is it the fact that they both think that they could be president of the United States someday? What is this business? Now, Andrew doesn't play well in the sandbox with anyone. We know that. But what is it that, here's de Blasio, he saves Cuomo during the campaign. He goes to the Working Families Party and he says, you gotta take this away from Zephyr Teachout and make sure that Cuomo gets it. And Cuomo shows no gratitude at all.
That's right. So that so incensed the mayor that he denounced the governor publicly in a very rare step. So the question is why? The question is why? I think a few things at work here. First of all, I think Governor Cuomo's fundamental approach to holding power, you said, doesn't play nice in the sandbox. I think whenever Governor Cuomo sees someone, a person, an institution, an elected official who has power, he believes that the best way to either protect himself or maximize his own power is to undermine them, to sap them, to attack.
I like it and I agree with it.
So that's step one. Step two is that, you know, who's going to be the big Dem in New York? Who's going to be the honcho here? When you look at the national stage, is it going to be Cuomo or de Blasio? And so I think immediately, in a way that Michael Bloomberg never rivaled Cuomo or was never perceived as a rival for Cuomo, and frankly, maybe Cuomo knew that was a fight that he better not pick because Bloomberg had billions of dollars and a media company with his name on it.
Absolutely agree.
And so I think that there was a natural rivalry for who was going to be the alpha Democrat in New York. And then the third dimension to this fight is that Cuomo and de Blasio are from very different wings of the Democratic Party and from the political spectrum generally. Cuomo is a centrist. He's very, very cozy with the business community. He has proffered policies that business leaders like and enjoy, whereas de Blasio came in office immediately promising to tax the rich, to tax businesses, and has really perhaps not endeared himself with that community. And so there are people out there, including this guy Richard Brodsky, a former state assemblyman, who I know is sometimes a guest on these airwaves, who say that there's a simmering fight for what does it mean to be a Democrat? Are you more like Andrew Cuomo or Hillary Clinton, you know, sort of more in the center toward the moderate, acceptable to the big moneyed interests? Or are you like a Bernie Sanders? Are you saying that we need to, as a party or Democrats as a party or the nation as a whole, need to get away from this, get power back to the people, to take from the wealthy, to essentially shatter and take on corporate power? And so I think that those three levels of tension, those three things are what's really fueling this feud.
Jimmy Veal, kind of Politico by way of identification. Let me ask you this. It just seems to me that these guys are basically destroying each other, and Andrew has nowhere to go after being governor. So everybody's sort of whispering around town, is he going to run for a third term?
Well, your column this week addressed this very, very point.
I did, and I said he has to because he has nowhere else to go.
And I believe very firmly that he will not.
Okay.
So regardless of whether or not he has to or not, I very firmly believe that he will not. I think that Governor Cuomo in his second term is not doing nearly as well as he did in the first term. And frankly, we should really kind of take a step back, take a deep breath, and evaluate the sort of extra circumstances of this first year of his second term. Mario Cuomo, the governor's father, died in January, on the day that the governor was inaugurated. And so, you know, all of us who have coped with the death of a close loved one, especially a parent, know what that does to you psychologically. And those of us who have nursed a close loved one toward death know that it is a draining process. And so I think that the period between Election Day in 2014 and the first of the year when Governor Cuomo was supposed to come out of the gate reinvigorated, filled with new energy for a year with the legislature, was really not spent doing the same kind of preparatory work that he had done previously, because I think he was correctly spending lots of time with Mario Cuomo as he grew ill and eventually passed from the earth. So I think that has sapped the governor.
And then it was his girlfriend, Sandra Lee.
Precisely. Right after the state budget, we found out that Sandra Lee, the governor's romantic companion, had breast cancer. She would need to undergo a double mastectomy. And so I think that for a man who is a workaholic, who we know is tireless about being governor, having personal distractions added a new dimension. I think we saw it affect his performance. So at the same time, we saw that there were lots of departures from the first term of administration to the second term. We're seeing that different people are being promoted from within, and we're seeing fewer of the marquee hires from outside New York that marked Cuomo's first administration as opposed to the second administration. The governor seems to be moving on various priorities. People are questioning whether or not he's staying true to his original course and his original campaign, or whether he's tacked severely to the left. And so the point is, I don't think that there is, at this moment, an overarching narrative.
I do.
For Andrew Cuomo's administration.
Can I just disagree with you for a second, Jimmy? Feel kind of Politico. You know, I think Andrew Cuomo had a million votes less in this campaign than he did the first time. I think he realizes. I think whoever's whispering in his ear right now says, don't be a schmuck. This is not doing you any good. So he begins to put feelers out to the teachers. He gives up on his educational reform. Each of those things, it seems to me, indicate, hey, I want to run for a third term, and I want some of these people who hate me to come back into my camp.
I think he wants to reinvigorate himself. I think he wants to boost himself up. I still disagree about the third term. I think the governor's tired. I think the governor's team is tired. And I also think that Governor Cuomo lived through Mario Cuomo's third term. And where he really saw after Cuomo's third term election in 1990, you could argue the wheels start to come off the train.
That's absolutely true. And he told me that.
And
the governor told me that.
And he doesn't want to repeat that mistake. Yeah. My guess is you'll see Andrew Cuomo tell people that he's running for a third term, because the minute he says otherwise, he's a lame duck.
Yeah.
He can't get things done. I think we're going to start to see fundraising for the governor's campaign sag a little bit. And I expect that at some point, Governor Cuomo is going to talk about how he's not going to seek a third term. And then, presuming whether or not the presidential election goes which way it goes here in 2016, if the Republicans are victorious, I think Andrew Cuomo could position himself to be a very serious contender for the presidency in 2020. He has many personal flaws as a candidate, but we can talk about that later. And I think that he'll do something for 2 years to bide time and do that. I don't think he'll seek a third term. And you know what? I may be wrong. You may be right.
Well, we don't know. I just think he's trapped. I don't think he has a place to go, Jimmy. And they're not going to make him Secretary of State. Although, I was absolutely fascinated when the Vice President of the United States, Joe Biden, appeared with him at LaGuardia Airport, put his arm around him and said, this is one of the best governors in the country. And that put Andrew at a tough spot because, you know, he's announced for Hillary a long time ago.
Yeah.
And here's Joe Biden, who may well be coming along, especially if Hillary gets into real trouble with the federal attorney general.
Yeah. And you know, it did put Cuomo in a spot. He sort of had to dance a little bit to try and explain his way out of it. He said that, you know, yes, I like Joe Biden. I support him. I think he's great. But that doesn't change that I've endorsed Hillary. So
how are the two leaders, Jimmy, you know this better than anybody, who took over for Skelos in the Senate, Flanagan, and who took over for Silver in the Assembly? How are these guys doing right now? I see that Hastie is making forays into upstate New York.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe that's going to do him much good, but that's where he's spending his time. So somebody has done that. He got himself into a little trouble already about ethical trouble, about who was paying for his cars and things of that kind, and whether he was double charging. But are these guys working out, is my question.
You know, in a way, you have to almost give them a curve, right? Because right now, the legislature is not in session. So
sure.
What both Carl Hastie and John Flanagan are doing is sort of a rebuilding and a listening. And you're right. Both Flanagan and Hastie are going around the state. Hastie's being very public about it. Flanagan's being a little bit more discreet about his tours. And I think it's valuable, because what does Carl Hastie know about dredging the Upper Hudson River? The answer was not much, but then he went. He talked to the stakeholders. He saw the site, and now he feels a little bit more comfortable on the issue. When you replicate that across the state, I think it's good. He recognizes, both he and Flanagan recognize, that they are essentially statewide elected officials, and therefore they should have a knowledge base about various local issues. How are they doing? It's a little bit hard to say. I think you have to give them a little bit of a break at first. Both Flanagan and Hastie made no sudden movements. They didn't immediately change top staffers. They left a lot of people in place. They left a lot of the chairs of legislative committees in place. Both recognized that they didn't want to steer the ship too quickly. I think that was very smart on both of their counts. They both also realized that they had to get through budget negotiations and end of legislative session negotiations with Cuomo. I think that in doing so, they were probably a little bit more tentative than their predecessors would have been. And I think that's particularly true of Hastie. I think that over the 20 plus years that he led the state assembly's Democrats, Sheldon Silver developed a very good sense of what kind of deal he could make and then sell to his conference. And I think that Hastie was a little bit more tentative about knowing what he could sell to his conference. correctly so. So whereas I think Silver could have maybe cut a bigger deal that perhaps traded the DREAM Act, might have included some version of an education tax credit, taken up and incorporated some of the many issues that instead fell off the table this past year, I think that the Hasty sort of kept it to the basics, made sure his conference was briefed, and you could argue played it a little bit safer. I think Flanagan did the same, but he had far less on the table this year. There was nothing that the Senate Republicans really wanted. Except to survive. And so in many ways, Flanagan had a much easier hand to play. But he, too, also was a little bit more tentative, perhaps, than Skelos would be. And I really think we have to see what these leaders do next year to see how they're going. Are they going to be setting the agenda? Are they going to be advancing ideas of their own? Are they going to be reactive to Governor Cuomo? How will Flanagan, the leader of the Republicans, deal with the Democratic chorus now, which includes Governor Cuomo, calling for an increase in the minimum wage? Will they allow that? Will they make some sort of a compromise? How will Hasty deal with people on his left who are looking for certain priorities? I think it's going to be an interesting legislative session. But as I said, I think they both did very well in the early stages, but the real tests are coming in January.
So if Cuomo is the candidate, I know you and I disagree on that. I think he has nowhere to go. You think he has to get out for whatever his reasons. If he is, who opposes him? Now, the Republicans I'm talking to, the Republican leadership, think that Rob Astorino seems to be the guy. He got schlung the last time out. And I suspect they think for some reason that he should get another chance, whereas there's an upstate guy who is not well known around the state, Chris Gibson. What do you make of that? And we only have 3 minutes.
Well, you're certainly right. Those are the two guys who are in the mix. I think at this point, it's very early to tell. That's the, of course, initial caveat and asterisk on this whole thing. Astorino did prove himself to be a credible messenger for the Republicans. He did an admirable job, and he frankly performed a little bit better than most people thought he would. But I think mostly because of liberal disaffection with Cuomo. You pointed out, Alan, that Cuomo got a million fewer votes than previously. And a lot of those were people who came out in the primary for Zephyr Teachout, people who wanted Cuomo to be more, do more on his left flank than he did. And then when election time came, they just simply sat on their hands and didn't come out to vote. And I think Astorino's challenge was that he didn't do much to reach beyond that traditional Republican base, which gets you about 30-35% of the New York electorate, plus or minus, depending on how you do. So in order for either Gibson or Astorino to be successful, according to experts, what they have to do is find issues where they can reach across the aisle, reach into the broad middle, and pick off some of the moderate voters, particularly upstate voters, which account for actually a majority of the electorate in this state. When it's a statewide race, pick off some of those voters who Governor Cuomo had so seamlessly and assiduously courted in both of his first two runs for office. And so it's going to come down to issues like, what are the positions on climate change? What are they saying about the Common Core? What are some of these issues that have traditionally killed Republicans, like abortion or gay rights? How do they stand on those? And will they be sufficiently made election issues in 2018 where it will hurt each man? And so I think that Gibson is positioning himself to try and be more of a moderate brand. And he's also positioning himself to get better known with the machers of the party who are going to provide the money for the campaign, and to be in a position in 2018 where he can make a case to the Republican electorate of, look, you know, Rob did great. He's a great guy, but he tried and lost. I'm something new. I'm something a little bit probably to the left of Rob on the political spectrum. We've spent a long time since we as Republicans won a statewide race. You should give me a shot. And I think that both of them are going to do that over the coming weeks, months, and years. And we'll be watching very closely.
Well, Jimmy Vielkind, you are a font of information. You know so much, and we very much appreciate your spending all of this time with us. And we'll have you back real soon, I hope. So thank you so much. We are out of time. Our guest has been Jimmy Vielkind, Albany Bureau Chief for Politico. Jimmy, again, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.